Hello and welcome to the Monday Postcast, looking forward but also very much looking back. And on this particular Monday, there are a plethora of goodies to look back on because we had a fantastic weekend across Doncaster, Leopardstown, the Curragh and Longchamp. And looking back on them with me, my Racing Post colleagues Tom Collins and Mark Boylan. And we'll start with the classic action at Doncaster on Saturday, where Hurricane Lane justified hot favouritism in the Kazoo St Ledger. Tom Collins, how good a performance was it?
Hi, Lee. I think it was an okay performance. I don't think it was a red hot St Ledger. People are going to forget that because obviously everyone was focusing on Hurricane Lane's performance and not those in behind. However, I do think the first two horses are very good. Moho Star has obviously proven this year that he's well capable of running well in classics. And Hurricane Lane, as I wrote in our big race analysis, the preview on Friday, all he had to do was run to the same level of form as he did in the Grand Prix de Paris to be unbeatable. And he didn't even manage to do that on RPRs, only a 1-2-2 for the St Ledger, 1-2-5 for the Grand Prix de Paris. But still, he was by far and away the best horse in the race. He's an immensely talented three-year-old. Charlie Appleby's got a wealth of riches, especially in the three-year-old division. Interesting to see how well he does in the arc next time.
And how well do you think he will do in the arc next time? I mean, if it was yours, would you definitely run him in the race?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to. I mean, I think Adiyar's the best of the Appleby three-year-olds. I presume he's going to go to the arc. I was reliably informed yesterday on Twitter that he suffered a setback, but I think he'll go there. And I think Adiyar will be the horse to beat. However, Hurricane Lane definitely deserves his place, especially after winning St Ledger. But to win the Ledger and the arc is just a massive achievement, a really hard task. I think he'll struggle. But saying that, I think he'll be there or thereabouts.
And Mark, what did you make of the Ledger? And also, what did you make of the performance of the Ballydoyle horses in there? And is there now any future as a top flat horse for High Definition?
Oh, that HD, those words are banned in my house now after the weekend. I gave him one more chance. I was been very, very forgiven now. Like, the sort of forgiven that, you know, priest now sitting listening to confessions has to be, and my God, I've ran out of patience now. I think really jury more than out on him. Find it very, very hard to draw any sort of positive from the run. And I mean, I was willing to say that at York, you know, Aidan, there's plenty of horses he sent to the Great Vulture that have improved and run well in the Ledger, you know. And there's no way the Great Vulture is your be all and end all. You're thinking two lengths off Hurricane Lane, the Dante, you know. Obviously, he had his blip at the Curragh when he made interference. You're trying to make excuses, but to be honest, that was the nail in the coffin for me. With cheek pieces on, racing closer to the pace, I find it hard to see a way back from. But in fairness, if I had to pick one Ballydoyle horse that I thought ran very, very well, the Mediterranean was one that could develop into quite a decent cup horse. And maybe he's the sort of one that would be very valuable to clients in Australia who could be ringing the County Tipperary place now this week looking for him. But He enhanced his reputation big time. I thought his run behind Jabir in the Great Vulture was a very, very good one. So in terms of a beaten horse going forward, I know there was a couple of lengths between them, but if you said to me next year, would I rather have Mojo Star or the Mediterranean? I'd nearly say the Mediterranean.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And Mark, you said plenty there about those Ballydoyle horses. Across the weekend, the general theme was one of largely of disappointment for Aidan O'Brien and the Coolmore owners, but it could have been worse. Particularly because, in some people's opinion, St Mark's Basilica deserved to be thrown out after the Irish Champion Stakes when he carried Tanawa across the course towards the end of a humdinger of an Irish Champion, which Poetic Flair wasn't disgraced in third. Did the best horse win that race, Mark?
I don't think we got the chance to fully find out. I think the best horse over 10 furlongs won the race. But, I mean, I think Tanawa, her performance in second, I think she's absolutely the one to beat in the arc. I have the ultimate respect for Adiyar Hurricane Lane, but you know Dermot well in terms of his target training. And people had maybe suggested in the run-up to the race that, you know, given her proven stamina, that you could rock on and go forward to Tarnawa. I think the decision to sit back and ride your race and not to change anything was with a view to, you know, you don't want to go into the arc on the back of a total flop, let's say, if things didn't go right from the front. I was very, very encouraged. But in terms of the way the race developed, I didn't think that St. Mark's Basilica would lose it, given, you know, precedent in terms of, you know, decisions over here and in Britain. I don't think over here he would have lost it, but I don't think Tarnawa was given the opportunity to show her very best. I think one thing that come away from this race as a kind of an aside, we don't have sectional times in Ireland. We're still awaiting sectional times to be introduced. You know, even GPS data, you know, I find it fascinating, you know, at your big meetings, especially when they highlighted it during your Breeders' Cups and Dubai World Cups, where they can say how much more distance a horse has travelled compared to other rivals. I think it would be fascinating to know exactly how much more St. Mark's Basilica covered compared to Poetic Flair. And to be fair, throw Tarnawa in there as well, because she went even wider again. So I think that sort of data would have been interesting to see. And I mean, when the race developed into a match where you had to develop a turn of foot or display a turn of foot, I should say, St. Mark's Basilica was always going to have the ace card there. But I was in no way discouraged by Tarnawa. In fact, I think she's enhanced her reputation.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Mark. I thought Tarnawa ran a super arc trial for Dermot Weld and the Aga Khan. Tom, I know Paul Keighley, a regular on these Racing Post podcasts and video programs. He was tweeting after the Irish champion that he thought Tarnawa was the arc winner after that race. What's your take on Tarnawa for the arc?
I think she has a good chance. However, I do think there's recency bias in the bookmaking approach to make her favourite with most firms. Obviously, with some firms, she's joint fav with Adair. I think she should be second favourite behind Adair. She's obviously a very good mare. Dermot Weld, as Mark's already touched on, a brilliant target trainer. She's won five of her last six. She goes there with a big reputation. She's prolific. But again, she's going to have to back up off. She had a pretty hard race in the Irish Champion. They were sprinting. That was a really thrilling finish. And they were going hammer and tongs in the closing stages. I think she's got a good chance in the arc, but I don't like her price.
And guys, if you were Aidan O'Brien, and this is a big if, but if you were and you were the Coolmore owners, you had to decide where to send St. Mark's Basilica next, which race would you be targeting for him as his big autumn target, Mark?
I hope I'm wrong, but I nearly would expect him to be retired. If they were being ambitious and having a crack, purely from a selfish point of view, I would love to see him drop down to a mile for the QE2 at Ascot and try and see what happens to himself and Baigo head-to-head. To me, that would be the most exciting option. But I think in terms of the horse's value at this stage, I would just a gut feeling would be that I'm not sure we will see him again. Like if you hang around, for example, on Champions Day, he's obviously better on quicker ground. You know, there's obviously a possibility that you're going to get an ease in the ground. You know, the Breeders' Cup this year is at Delmar, and I'm not too sure that, you know, ending your career over there. If, for example, if you got a bad draw, it's the sort of track now that wouldn't be absolutely ideal in that sense, if, you know, in terms of things could possibly go against him. And what do you hang around then for Hong Kong? It's just too late in the year, and I don't think it enhances his value. So you know, from a sporting sense, give me the QE2. I'd love to see him, and even Palace Pier, if he was to turn up there, I think that'd be one of the races of the season. Poetic Flair back over a mile again, if he turned up, you know, that to me would be a super race. But I just don't know if we're going to see him again, to be honest, Lee.
Okay, and Tom, as the Post's biggest American aficionado, would he have realistic claims in the Breeders' Cup Classic?
I mean, the Breeders' Cup Classic is a completely different ask to what the races he's been running in. Obviously, the Coral Eclipse and on Saturday as well. I wouldn't be backing him at Del Mar, personally. I would like to see him turn up at Champions Day and not be retired, maybe for the Champions Stakes, though it's all going to be ground-dependent, isn't it? Last year, we had a horrendous October and the ground was just bottomless. Hopefully it'll be decent ground and we'll see him again.
Okay, Mark, just going back to Leopardstown again and the Matron Stakes. I didn't think it was the greatest Matron Stakes I'd ever seen, but I think Mother Earth is a fantastic horse, and I thought she covered herself in glory in defeat, but the victory went the way of Jesse Harrington, and a surprise victory too.
It was, and to be quite honest, in terms of natural ability, I thought that No Speak Alexander could show up in a race like this and run well. But on that sort of ground, I had big doubts. You know, you look back at her Irish Guineas third, came on heavy ground. She's won, I think it was the Atazi at the Curragh with a real dig in the ground too. I was actually at Roscommon the day she won her maiden, and I've never been as wetted as a race course as I was that day. Like, to me, this was chalk and cheese heading to Leopardstown, but a natural ability has got her there. I don't think she does a whole pile when she hits the front, you know. Ideally, maybe she could have been played a little bit later, but I'm sure we're going to talk about the way the race unfolded with the bit of interference there. I'm sure Shane Foley was probably blue in the face answering questions about it. You know, ultimately, Mother Earth Ryan Moore went riding for luck. You know, when Shane Foley did reach for his stick, the horse has shifted. I don't think he was to know that the horse would have immediately shifted when he did go for his stick. And I think he was going the quicker than Mother Earth at the time in terms of being able to pursue a gap or to hold space. But there certainly was interference. Mother Earth definitely was impacted. But, you know, when you're looking at the phrasing of, you know, your rules over here in Ireland in terms of interference, where you're thinking that has No Speak Alexander improved her position as a result, you know, I still think she might have won. You know, I think Mother Earth could, well, she's so honest, and she could have kept the winner very, very true in the finish. And maybe it would have helped her if she was joined a little bit earlier, No Speak Alexander, because I don't think she does a whole pile when she's left there. But it was definitely one of the big talking points in the weekend anyway. And I have to say, Jessica Harrington, what a weekend for her.
Oh,
I
mean, yeah.
They could have ran the stable cat or the horse, and they would have nearly picked up prize. I think Everton on Saturday at Leopardstown picked up prize money. Just one of those dream weekends for them. And to get a Group 1 win for this filly by Shalat, can have you very, very happy for all that team.
Yeah, the Jessie Harrington horses and the Geraldine horses were incredible form at Leopardstown and across Irish Champions weekend. So, Tom, with that matron stakes and the Shane Foley reward, was it a professional foul?
Look, this is racing, isn't it? We saw Samart Basilica get the rub of the green by the result not being turned around in the champion for Aidan O'Brien, and then Mother Earth, it was the opposite. You know, Aidan didn't get what he wanted there. Mother Earth, I thought, was unlucky. I would like to have seen her get a clear run just to see if she would have passed No Speak Alexander. She's only won three times in her career, Mother Earth, but she is a dual Group 1 winner. She's pretty hard to catch right, but when she does get it right, she wins. These kind of Group 1s, when they're scrimmaging, kind of leaves a sour taste in the mouth. I thought Chambers Elise was really unlucky and behind as well. It's just nice to see these horses get a clear run. But as you say, a brilliant day for Jessica Harrington with the winner, No Speak Alexander.
Not a brilliant day for the Queen's Horse Reach for the Moon, who went into the Champagne Stakes at Doncaster with a very tall reputation, having dotted up in the Solario at Sandown. He was defeated in the Champagne Stakes by Bayside Boy. Frank Dettori thought he felt a little bit flat on what was his fifth run of the season. Tom, for racing, there could not be a bigger story next year than if the Queen went into the Derby in a platinum Jubilee year in the week of those celebrations with a leading Derby candidate. Is Reach for the Moon still a proper classic aspirant for next year, or has that bubble now well and truly been burst?
No, I think he's got a good chance next season, providing obviously he trains on. Look, he's by See the Stars. He's not going to be best suited to 7 furlongs, which he's been running at all season. Yes, he was really impressive in the Solario. I was at Sandown that day, albeit we had a head-on view, so I couldn't actually see the race very well. But he was very, very impressive in the way he moved away. He's got a massive stride. I think he's going to be better suited to a bigger field as well. And as you mentioned, Frankie said he was flat. So, look, I don't think you can give up on a horse after just one run. I think that's one of the biggest bugbears from myself about punters, that they're willing to just chuck a horse away from one disappointing effort. And to be fair, we're saying disappointing. He was still second, and he was only denied in the final few strides by a horse in Bayside Boy, who Roger Behrens always held in high regard. Look, Bayside Boy could be 3 from 3. He only just lost a narrow bob to Masakela, who had experience and is a decent animal for Andrew Balding. So, I think Bayside Boy is going to go to the Dewhurst. Interesting to see how he fares there to factor the form with Reach for the Moon. Lucille back in the field, to me, looked like he was feeling something throughout the whole race. I haven't seen anything, any comments or anything since from Richard Hannon, but he was carrying his head awkwardly and hung a bit right. So I'm not too sure he ran his race, but I wouldn't be giving up on Reach for the Moon just yet.
Okay, and Tom and Mark, anything else from Saturday that caught your eye that you would like to reference for future punting possibilities?
Yeah, I give a mention. Sorry, Tyrone, go away.
No, mate, you go.
Go, Mark.
Champing at the bit here. I thought Liberty de Grecia should have won the first, the Ingabell Stakes at Leopardstown. She had no cover from a wide draw. The loose horse didn't do her any favours either. It was just a little bit frustrating for her. She's only beaten half a length, and I thought Colin Keane was dynamite on the winner. So Liberty de Grecia for Paddy Toomey, who could have won two of the first three races of Champions weekend, but he made up for it on Sunday with La Petite Coco, his only other runner on the weekend. Aside from that, I just thought there was one other there, Crowns Major. He was fourth in the Patingo handicap, trained by Emmett Mullins, the Ultra Shootout at Mullins, and your first time cheek pieces on him. He's the sort of horse that still looks to be learning about the game. For all that he's had a plenty of experience in them handicaps this year, I still don't think we've seen the very best of him yet. You know, wherever he goes next season, he could develop into an Ebor type of horse. He'd be very, very much on my radar. Crowns Major.
And what about you, Tom?
Well, I didn't actually watch that many races on Saturday, surprisingly, because I was getting ready for a stateside shift. We covered a couple races at Lingfield on the stateside shift, and Vitaline won for Ben James. I just want to mention Ben James. Brilliant start to his training career. 3 from 6 with his runners so far. Vitaline's been the perfect horse to get him kick-started. And the former amateur jockey looks like he's going to have a good training career ahead of him. So interesting, a man to watch there, Ben James.
A man to watch there from Tom Collins. That ends part one. We should be looking at the great Sunday action and looking at the rest of the week in part two.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to part two of the Monday Postcast. Myself, Lee Mottis, joined by my Racing Post colleagues, Tom Collins and Mark Boylan. We are going to be looking at the day two action from Irish Champions Weekend in a second. But first of all, the big talking point really from Sunday and the big horse who was running on Sunday was Snowfall, the runaway winner of the Oaks, the Irish Oaks and the Yorkshire Oaks. She was favourite for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe going into the Prix Vermeil. She was a long odds on favourite, but she was well beaten and trouble early in the home straight on the Frankie de Torre. And ultimately, no match for Teona in the Vermeil. She's now as big as 11-2 for the Arc. Tom Collins, is Snowfall now still a legitimate Arc candidate, or do we now have to move on and look elsewhere?
I mean, much like what I said with Reach for the Moon, I don't think you should be giving up on a horse just yet. Saying that, yeah, I'm not going to be backing Snowfall in the Arc. So it's kind of, I'm kind of contradicting myself. However, 11-2, she's a much better bet now. I mean, anyone that was getting stuck in at what price was she? 9-4 to 3-1 or in that kind of range. They're obviously thinking, well, I should rip up my ticket right now, but I wouldn't be doing so. Look, she didn't run her best race, did she? She just clearly didn't fire
up. Do you know why she didn't run her best race?
Why? Go on, Lee.
No, I'm asking you. Do you?
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were going to provide some incredible insight just then.
No, incredible insight from me here, Tom. No, I mean, Frankie, to an effect, blamed Holly Doll for not setting a strong enough pace on Lajer Conde. But even if that was the case, she should surely still have performed better than she did.
Well, she had every chance, didn't she? Snowfall came there 2 furlongs out. She was alongside the leaders. She had every chance to go through and win that race as decisively as she has been winning her previous races. You know, in the Yorkshire Oaks, she blew away, blew past a better field. At the Curragh, she absolutely dominant, albeit in the Irish Oaks, it didn't have that much depth. And then at Epsom, she was incredible with a real fast final sectional, albeit those in behind were struggling on the ground. So you were expecting Snowfall just to breeze clear. She hung. She didn't really fire. She ran an RPR of just 114. That's £9 below her best this year. I think she can bounce back. Maybe the fact that Aidan O'Brien's horses aren't firing on all cylinders. Only 1 from 45 in the last 2 weeks. And that one winner was St. Mark's Basilica. So maybe you can factor that in. It was a disappointing effort. Teona was only rated 109 coming into the race. I don't think Teona's an Arc candidate. Snowfall will need to step back up to her previous level of form if she's to feature at Longchamp. But I'm sure she will do.
And Mark, you were at the Curragh yesterday. What was the vibe there about what Snowfall did?
Just a little bit underwhelmed, to be quite honest. Now, at the same time, we look at Love in terms of what she achieved last year, and she didn't make it to the Arc in the end. It was ground initially, and obviously she wouldn't have had the chance anyway, the way it worked out with the France Gallo movements towards the end. But I will say, like, this race has not probably panned out to suit her. You know, I think the very best of Snowfall is when there's an honest gallop up front and when others are dropping away, and she seems to get stronger as the race goes on. And, you know, we know on these French trials, sometimes they don't seem to burst themselves out in front. You know, possibly, yeah, I can understand what Frankie is saying in that sense, but I think, you know, true champions can pull it out of the bag when they need to. But whether Snowfall, would they really have had her absolutely cherry ripe for the Vermeil when you have an Arc right on the horizon? You know, I still expected her to win. I still thought she should win, but I wasn't expecting the same sort of dazzling display that we've got so far. Ultimately, as I said, when we look at what Love achieved last year, you know, when we look back in hindsight, we kind of question a little bit how strong it was and how the visual was obviously so good. And there was substance to what she did in you know, clock, etc. I think did support it, but in different factors. But I just wonder the standard of form that's brought by the likes of Tarnawa, Adyar, Hurricane Lane. You know, I think if even if any of those horses were put in this scenario, I think they would have won still. And for all that she's going to get the weighing allowances come arc time, I still think she's going to need to step up. And I'm a little bit disappointed, but ultimately not writing her off entirely. But I just thought, if, you know, Tiona, for all she's very, very solid and, you know, doesn't have a huge amount of miles in the clock with a view to improving, I just thought she should have been too good for her, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think what we saw in the Vermeer was clearly a surprise. I think it would also be a surprise looking at the results of the Prix Niel and the Prix Foix if either Bubble Gift or Deep Bond went on to win the Arc. Gentlemen, Tom or Mark, does either of you believe that either of those two has a chance in the Arc? If you don't, stay silent. And we now move on to the Curragh, where there were many, many reasons to be absorbed by the action there. Cracking Group 1 card on the second day of Irish Champions Weekend. Mark, you were saying you were there watching the action, writing about the action for the Racing Post. We'll just run through the Group 1s in order. And the Flying Five also produce a bit of a shock outcome with Romantic Proposal winning at 16-1 for Sprint King, Eddie Lynham and Chris Hayes. This wasn't one I was predicting. What about your good self?
Well, I'll tell you, in these sprints, I would always take the view that when the British come over, you have to seriously sit up and take note. And I would have been someone that, if you asked me for a bet beforehand, I nearly would have been suggesting back the British forecast with the runners that were over here. So you'll appreciate my surprise when I saw an Irish 1-2 here with, I think, the forecast paid in the range of 400 and something to one. I definitely didn't see it coming. But Romantic Proposal, if you ever need an example of how Eddie Lynham is an absolute ace with these sprinters, I'm sure it's just it's an easy talking point, I know, but he's absolutely done a marvellous job with this filly. Like, she's winning kind of handicapped down around the kind of 70 range early on in her career. You know, she was initially tried over on islands and, you know, 7 furlong sort of trips. And she's just to have the speed now to come back to 5. He's gradually brought her to the boil. You know, really, really, I'm delighted for Chris Hayes as well. Big chance for him. And he took it with both hands after things didn't work out for her last time. And I'd say the runner-up of KCU for Ado McGuinness. I think that was Ado's first runner in an Irish Group 1. And by God, he did him proud at a big price. They've always held the horse in high regard. He had maybe not brought his best to the table in the Commonwealth Cup, but that was right back to his absolute best. And ultimately, I was a bit disappointed with Dragon Symbol. Thought he had every chance and, you know, I thought he was in the right place to put it up to him. But I don't know. I just thought when he stayed 6 and he was close enough over 5, I thought he'd get the job done. A little bit disappointed. But last Slippers camp, I doubt they'll be too upset with a view to her later targets this year. You know, you obviously have the Breeders' Cup to go back to again, or she's obviously won an Abbey too. So, ultimately, Winter Power was disappointing as well. But, you know, a 3-year-old filly after having a big season so far, you know, I'd be of the forgiving nature in terms of her that, you know, it's possibly a lot to ask when she's continuing on into this stage of the year.
Yeah, she was very keen as well under Sylvester D'Souza. Tom Rohan completely missed the break. The more I watch that race back, the more I think if he'd started with the rest, he might have won it.
Absolutely phenomenal effort, wasn't it? Yeah. I had to watch the race back a few times. Mark's rubbed it in already, because unknowingly, I have to say, because my only bet on Sunday was a reverse forecast Romantic Proposal Glass Slippers. And I obviously got done there. It wasn't the best race for me. But yeah, as you mentioned, Rohan, I've watched the race a few times back. I don't know how he's managed to get so close. I know they've gone really quick early with Winter Power, who's definitely better suited to York, I have to say. But he's only been meeting 2 lengths at the line. Incredible effort, Rohan, from a 3-year-old that started his campaign off, what, a mark of 55 or something ridiculous. Dramatic improvement up the ranks for him. He was the one to take out the race. But yeah, I'm still a bit bitter about the result.
Well, let's try and cheer you up, Tom, by talking about the 2 Group 1 juvenile races on the Curragh card, the Moyglare Stud Stakes and the Vincent O'Brien National Stakes, sponsored by Goffs. I think it has to be said that the Moyglare didn't look a great renewal going into it. Discoveries won the race from Agatha and Sunset Shiraz. But I would argue that much more interesting in terms of a race, and certainly in terms of the future, was the National Stakes. And I thought Native Trail ultimately won with plenty of wow factor. How impressed were you?
I was extremely impressed. Again, I was at Sandown for when Native Trail made his debut. I stood alongside Ken Peterson. I mentioned this on What a Shout, actually, on Friday. We stood alongside Ken Peterson, and he said, Obviously a paddock judge, we've seen him on ITV. He said this horse really impresses him, takes the eye, and it impressed me too. He impressed me too, Native Trail, in the paddock. And then he produced it on the track with a real good kick to him by four lengths, beat Royal Patronage, who subsequently won. Then next time he beat Masakela, we've seen that form come out this weekend with Bayside Boy winning as well. So that form looks strong. And then he just bolted clear of Point Lonsdale, who I thought was the league above coming into the race. He has a massive stride. A huge stride, in fact, the biggest since Vizanari, according to Simon Rollins. So look, there are loads of things that are pointing you in the right direction for Native Trail. Unbeaten after three runs. He's clearly going to improve from 2 to 3 with that big frame. I think he could easily win the Derby next season, especially, obviously, he has to handle Epsom. He's a big sort, of I mentioned. Big sorts don't always handle Epsom, given it's Canberra, etc. But I think he's full of promise this year. Interesting if he goes to the Breeders' Cup. I would, if I was Connections, decide not to leave him for next season. But yeah, it was a really good race. I think Point Lonsdale is a good Derby contender as well. He just seems to be a galloper, a grinder. He doesn't quicken very easily. And again, he looked to run a bit flat to my eye. But I wouldn't be giving up on him either. I think it's a really good race.
Mark, would you sort of concur with what Tom was saying there? Really impressive Native Trail. Wouldn't give up on Point Lonsdale. And what did you think about the Moglare Stud Stakes?
Meidler, firstly, I actually was more impressed than maybe some people were with Discoveries. I think when you look at her physically, you have to appreciate that she's a very, very different build to her sister Alpha Centauri. And I get the impression that looking at her, you think she's a next year filly rather than this year. And to do what she did in those circumstances. And if you watch her back again, she's still quite green. And Agartha, in terms of, you know, I would say she's the toughest 2-year-old in Ireland at the moment, just in terms of her, the way she goes about her business. In them stakes races, I really, really have a lot of respect for her and the way she goes about it, and for Discovery's kind of natural ability. I think Shane Foley said it was the fastest she would have ever gone in her life. For her to be able to do that now, it made me sit up and take notice. And I think 20-1 for the 1,000 guineas, you know, I think there's worse 20-1 shots out there than her for that. I'm not saying necessarily that, you know, I absolutely would be banking on her to turn up and do the business, but I just think in your anti-post plays, I think that's one of the better value ones at this stage. Have to bear in mind that the Cordiga Joe looked to over race a touch, and she was sent off favourite, having been supplemented for the race. And obviously, I think Homeless Song is a bit disappointing, considering the reputation that she seemingly has. But you know, the race maybe didn't pan out ideally for her, lack of experience, first run after a little bit of a break. I wouldn't be giving up on her. And I said going into the race that I would have thought she's the best long term prospect to come out of it. But the way Discovery's won, I nearly have to change my thinking. She was very, very good. And yeah, Native Trail. To me, this was kind of the wow performance of the weekend. I thought this was very, very good. Now, how highly you rate the performance depends on whether you think Point Lonsdale ran his race or not. You know, again, I haven't got a chance to break it down furlong by furlong, just pure time since I've come home yesterday evening. But I wonder, did Point Lonsdale try and take on Ebra River, who's, you know, potentially more of a sprinting type? Did he try and take him on for speed at a point of the race where maybe it didn't help him, and then Native Trail has kind of got organised and gone by him? Because I did expect Point Lonsdale to pull clear of Ebra River, and he didn't really. There was only half a length between them. And to be honest, though, in terms of derbies, I really wouldn't like Native Trail at Epsom. Maybe I've read him wrong, but just physically, God, he'd need to mature an awful lot more for him to be of interest there. I think he's the most likely 2,000 guineas winner at this stage. But just the undulations of Epsom, you know it well, Lee, from your locality there. I'd be a little bit suspect now about him going around there. And, you know, even Oasis Dream can be much more of interest to me to the guineas. But be interesting to see what happens at Point Lonsdale. I think Maid mentioned it might be possible that we don't see him again this year. So we might have to wait over the winter as to question what might have happened. But he still remains a horse of some promise. But Native Trail, that was just brilliant.
Yeah, he certainly was. And the other great one on the card was the Irish St. Ledger. Really popular victory this. For Sonny Boy Liston, Johnny Murta and Ben Cohen. It was a frenetically run race, Tom, wasn't it? They were strung out all across the Curragh through much of the contest. And in the end, Sonny Boy Liston outstayed Twilight Payment.
Yeah, they went a hard gallop from the outset. Aidan O'Brien loves to send these fast pacemakers out to try and make the race a test. And Sonny Boy Liston stayed really well, backed up his York victory. Really impressive at York, actually, in the Ebor, beating Quick Thorn, and then going straight from a handicap into a Group 1 and winning the Irish St. Ledger. Brilliant training performance by Johnny Murta, who's had a fantastic season as well with his runners. And Sonny Boy Liston looks like a major player, given he's just a 4-year-old, for all these staying races in the future.
And potentially might be followed by the Melbourne Cup, do you think?
Not too sure. I'm sure it'd be worth a fair few quid if someone wants to put their hand in their pocket to buy him, or if the connections up to go down there themselves. He's done a lot this year, is the only thing, in terms of very, very tough tests. You know, the Ebor is very demanding. That was a really, really demanding race. And yeah, whether it's this year or next year, he's legitimate. He'd be more than entitled to take his chance. But, you know, I have to say, when we're talking about Melbourne Cups, the runner-up here, I think he's one of the most enjoyable horses to follow, Twilight Payment. Like, 8 years of age, and he got involved in this pace earlier than Sonny Boy Liston. He was closer for a lot of it. And just so honest. He absolutely gave everything. I thought it was a really, really solid run and defeat from him. And if you want an eye-catcher, not a potential candidate for eye-catcher of the weekend, King of the Castle. I mean, rated 95 coming in here, and he split horses rated, you know, 112, 113. I'm sure the handicapper will give him a couple of pounds. But, you know, you look at how he has stepped up so much from his run in the Melrose when he was fancied by plenty. I think, if my memory serves me right, I think he's a brother to Serpentine. And he just, pointed out by one of my colleagues when I was doing the analysis yesterday, there's a big price about him next year for the Ascot Gold Cup, surely. I just thought that was a real eye-catcher run. I'd watch that back, King of the Castle.
Okay, definitely a name to note there. And guys, we're looking for names to note now for the rest of the week as we look forward to what we've got in store. Newbury and Ayr at the weekend. The Ayr Gold Cup at Ayr, surprisingly. And good stuff at Newbury featuring the Mill Reef Stakes. Tom, what are you looking forward to? And what would be your best bet at this stage for any race taking place anywhere this week?
Oh, very good question. Well, Belmont Park kicks off this week, so my action, my focus will be turned towards the action there from Thursday. However, the nap of the week at this stage will be Buoyant in the 1:30 at Yarmouth on Thursday. Trained by Martin Mead, ridden by Ryan Moore, already booked in. Ran three times in maiden and novice company. Bumped into a horse called Eraz at Ascot second time. I really like Eraz. He disappointed last time out, but he was lame. And then last time, Buoyant bumped into a horse called Ribby, who I thought should have won at the weekend, but got a luckless trip. He's been given an opening mark of 80, which is more than fair. I think Buoyant will win the 1:30 at Yarmouth on Thursday.
Buoyant then for Tom Collins. Mark Bolling, what's making you buoyant looking ahead to this week?
Well done. Usually I would be looking towards something close to home, but I will say there's a horse running at Ayr on Thursday in the 4:45. The Jim Goldie trained Rory. I thought he might have got away a little bit lightly here from the handicapper. He got 7 for winning at Musselburgh last time. The third has come out and won again since. And I just thought the style in which he won now was one that could kind of go through the ranks another little bit. I'd say now, don't want to criticise the horse and say he's not entirely straightforward. I'd say he's still learning as a three-year-old. And Jim has a lovely way of bringing them on naturally. He's won at the course before over 5. Just think he's got a lot in his favour. So obviously when the final field comes out, I'll either have more confidence or have it dented. But I just thought Rory now was an improving horse that could still be underestimated by a mark of 69. He ran to an RPR of 74 last time. So I'd be very interested to see how he gets on. Rory in the 4:45.
Fantastic. Rory then for Mark. Buoyant for Tom. They've given you 2 for the rest of this week. They've looked back on a fantastic weekend of action. Thank you, boys. If you enjoy these shows, please do make sure to rate, review and subscribe wherever you are choosing to listen to us. We'll be back on Friday with an detailed look at that weekend's racing, Ayr, Newbury, Newmarket, much more besides. Until then, goodbye.